Welcome to the Yellow Dog Sangha. So nice to sit with you tonight. Such sweetness all around us. So, Vipassana. Vipassana means to see things clearly, seeing things as they are. It's a logical process of mental health through just self-observation. So it's simple as far as you want to think about simplicity. That's pretty simple. So in meditation, we're training ourselves to just observe ourselves. And if we've established a daily practice, which is a prerequisite, we start spending a lot of time being quiet and still. Something, I don't know about you, but something that was a change for me, being quiet and still. And then at the beginning, we feel, and being quiet and still, we get sleepy, we get bored, we're restless, we doubt, what am I doing? Why am I doing? And then really sometimes just get lazy about it. So these are the hindrances that come our way when we start, and really as we continue meditating. And they're called hindrances, but really they're just phenomena that arises for us not to notice, or for us to notice but not to get to put too much attachment to them. It's just, that's part of it. Being quiet and still, we're going to be sleepy at times. Quiet and still, you know, we're going to be bored. And so it takes time and it takes the right effort. And we begin to perceive things that we don't see through our normal waking consciousness. We see things. We begin to see things. And the teachings say, if you're getting bored, don't say that to a teacher. Don't say, okay, I'm bored. Because immediately the teacher will say, sit up straight, practice more concentration. You're not paying attention enough. Because the present moment is everything but boring. But we've forgotten. Why? Well, we've forgotten because we've not put ourselves in that situation very often until now. So there's nothing boring about it. It's the very opposite. Life begins to open up to aspects that have always been here, but we didn't know how to access them, or, you know, we just lost them through the, you know, through not knowing. So, we meditators with more stillness, we start opening to the knowing of life. Because life is not as it appeared to us, or that we are, that we've been taught. It's other than that. And we have to wake up to that. And one way to do that is the way we're doing it. It's not the only way, but it's been tried many, many times, so it's most useful in that way. And in practice, the teachings promise us more freedom. Freedom from what? We're really freedom from the tyranny of our minds. That's just one of them. The tyranny of the mind. So, but we become more interested in our bodies, become more interested in our feelings and emotions and mind and mind states that wake us up, that we are not privy to when we're out and about interacting in life. So that's what we've been studying here lately in the Yellow Dogs, is the four foundations of mindfulness. This is where we want to put our focus. And it's mindfulness of the body. And again, we begin to see this body in a whole different way. Mindfulness of sensations. Mindfulness of sensations that go into feelings, that go into emotions. And so we have mindfulness of the mind. We begin to see firsthand directly what's going on inside of us. What is this mind all about? And then mindfulness of mind states. What are we saying to ourselves? So we're doing just a real close look at something we probably have not paid much attention to. And it becomes real interesting, because it's not what we thought. So this mindfulness in of the body and the mindfulness of these feelings get us ready once we begin to pay close attention to really help us see what the mind, the impact the mind is having on our bodies. And with that information, the truth of the matter, then we see that we have choices. We don't have to live the life that we've been conditioned to live if we don't want to. But that's the issue. How do we shift? Well, it's a slow process. It's not a quick fix, but it's worth the time and effort, because it does bring more happiness to us. Why? We're awake. It wakes us up as if we were 5-year-olds. Been around a child lately? Are they very happy? Not if they're hungry, they're not going to be very happy. But you can just see in their beings, there's a simplicity in their being that's available to all of us. That's who we really are. We've been out of the womb for a long, long time. They haven't. So they haven't forgotten. But somehow, with life, we've forgotten. And so in this search within ourselves, in the process, we've noticed that we have this sense of self. It's a sense of self. And we probably know it as the ego. Sense of self and the ego. And so our sense of self or ego comes from the mind. That's why mindfulness of the mind's important, because we begin to get to see, experientially, how the mind creates all these falsehoods. And one is this ego we carry around. And once we start looking honestly and closely, the ego is just made up. We've made it up in a sense of kind of mind states. Oh, I'm like this. Okay, more, you know, like this. Well, somebody says I'm more like this. Well, I feel like I'm more. And then we develop this strong sense of self. And nothing's wrong with it, because that's part of being a human being. So we don't want to try to get rid of it, but we do want to get to know it. Because if we don't get to know it, then we all kind of know what our egos have in store for us. I don't know about you, but I get really aggravated at that ego a lot. Because it's like, oh, I didn't mean to say that. I didn't mean to do that. Oh, I wish I could take that back. And that's okay. That's just part of being, you know, a human being. But we've created a false sense of self. And this practice has a lot to teach us about that. Not to have to believe it. You don't have to believe that there's a sense of self. No. But just notice, is there a possibility that this sense of self is not as it appears? And little by little, if we don't question it, that's our trap. All we have left in life are our habits. Our own virtual reality that we have created by our own minds. So, is it important to get to know the mind in its true nature, the truth of the mind? Or do we want to believe the mind and what everybody says about the mind, especially in the Western country? It's going to save us. Or I don't know, it's going to make us happy, because we can think of all kinds of things that make us happy for about this long. And again, nothing's wrong with that. But what the Buddha says, and what we find out for ourselves, is there's much more happiness found within the truth. The very truth of our existence. And it's not going to come to us unless we ask for it. Or unless we open to it. Or unless we put the right effort to it. We'll just be bogged down with the same old, same old. With very little magic. That 5-year-old, 4-year-old, they see the magic all around them. Because they're in the present moment. If we lived in the present moment, the truth is it is magical. And so, the journey begins. Who am I really then if I'm not this sense of self? And that's the question. Who am I? Who am I really? And just asking that question throws it out to whatever you want to call it, that you're ready to hear the truth. You know, these teachings are ancient, and they would not offer it to we Western people, probably because of our Western mind, because we weren't ready for it at all. Well, somehow, this last 50 years the last 76 years, 76, 75, 76 years then something has shifted. And so Jack Kornfield says we are in a paradox. We're anxious. Why wouldn't we be? We have this mind and body that we really don't know quite what to do with, except to follow the path of maybe our ancestors. But there's two parallels of spiritual quest that cannot be separated. One is led by the heart, and that's our perspective that starts arising, and we start touching. It's already within us. It's not like we have to obtain it. It's there. We just have to open to it, and we have to find ways to open to it. And this is one way that's been tried or true. It's not the only way. We know that. But we touch that part within us that is spacious, that is unlike the tiny, tiny little ego. Ooh, what is that? And we begin to open up to who we really are, and come to find out who would have thought we're all of it. We're all connected, but our ego, our sense of self, keeps us separated from each other. That's the philosophy of the Western mind. Have you not noticed? Keep me separate from you because I want more. You maybe have less, but I want more. And I want to do certain things that will get me to the more. And something's wrong with you if you don't want the more. And so, but we have this also healthy sense of self that we must have in order to live in this society. So we can't just do away with it, but we can get to know it. And in getting to know our sense of self or our ego, it doesn't have to be hard or heavy. There can be a lightness to it. Oh, hello, ego. I've seen you before. There you go again. Because you're not your ego. Why are you not your ego? Why are you not your mind? Why are you not your feelings? Why are you not this body? It's not going to last. It's just temporary. We're here temporarily. We forget that. So it's not lasting. So in this process of living this finite life, we can find out who we really are without the mind and the body. But it's not going to come to us by just wanting it to. Doesn't happen that way. There are laws of nature that we have just ignored. And these laws of nature aligns us with nature. And so naturally the happiness rises because what? We're back into who we really are, closer to nature. So the teachings say that self is real, but it's not true. And the reason it's not true is because it's fleeting. It's going to go. And under the umbrella of Buddha Dharma or Buddha psychology, in the deepest sense, now this is the deepest sense, so don't do like I did when Randy said this to me. The self doesn't exist. So you just want to open to that possibility. You don't have to believe it. And cognitive therapy has to do with cognitive issues. The mind. And so it's most useful. So you put cognitive therapy that goes directly to the mind with Buddha psychology, and you've got a well-balanced practice that's going to help you in both worlds. Now, knowing the nature of the mind opens us to a lot of information about the mind. However, how about those shadows? How about those things that we've stuffed? How about the things in our subconscious that we haven't been able to come to terms with? They're still there. So, as you well know, there's just lots to know about us, ourselves. So, this is a great sentence. I'm going to say it a couple times. I said it last week because this is the path. We want to get to know and heal this sense of self, this ego, okay? Without feeding the delusion of who, what it is, or who it is, of the self. So you see where we're working? On two levels. Two different, but at the same time, this has to happen in order for us to open to the truth about both existence. So Buddha Dharma teaches us to know that we are both cognitive and spiritual. That's what you want to remember. Don't disregard the mind and the body. Don't all of a sudden say, I meditate, so I'm spiritual. I'm spiritual and I'm not going to try to have a mind and a body, or I'm not going to try to be human. It's called spiritual bypass. And it happens a lot. No. We're all of it. All the above. And when we have the true understanding or the deep wisdom of the both, then that's where complete wisdom, complete connectedness happens. And we need both to wake up. Okay, moving right along. I got half of it done, Carlos. We were talking about lessons and how to create them and what's the drawbacks in trying to give a Dharma talk, and it's like, oh, I didn't get to say everything I have written down. Something's wrong. Something's wrong. But, Carlos, I noticed it. That's what's important. I noticed it, and that's okay. So I'm going to stop there, and we'll continue this lesson along these lines next week.
So will you read that sentence again that you
said
you were going to read?
That I said I was going to read a million times.
Yeah,
and
I
then
really
didn't.
Like that sentence.
Oh, it just says it all. Okay, let me find it because it's at the beginning of my lesson.
Is it?
Yes. I just got myself carried away. Okay, this is it. Oh.
I should have asked you sooner.
Yes. This is the essence of it. In trying to get mentally healthier, which can help through cognitive therapy, is most useful when we can connect it to the Buddha Dharma. And the Buddha Dharma is, oh, I've got this mind and body. But the Buddha Dharma says, I'm everything, or there is not a self. So that's the paradox. But that's what we have to work with and keep in mind, where we don't say, oh, I'm spiritual or not spiritual, or, you know, or one's more important than the other. Not under this umbrella of mind and body existence.
Right. So you say we work with a healthy, develop a healthy sense of self without feeding the false sense of self. Without,
thank you. You said it better.
Ego. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because I had, and because of the talk, the Buddha said something very similar to that upon his awakening. It's one of my favorite phrases. The Buddha says, after having seen what the sense of self is all about, he said, O house builder, you are seen. You will not build this house again, for your rafters are broken, your ridgepole shattered. My mind has reached the unconditioned. I have attained the destruction of craving. O house builder, you are seen. You'll not build this house again. So you saw clearly the false sense of self. You will not build his life around that again. But he also sees that there's that he goes about living his life from that point on without feeding and identifying with that false sense of self. So anyway, I love that talk. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome. Thank you.